Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome back to Turf Show Times Radio, the podcast, Pod TST. I'm Kenneth Arthur with Turf Show Times, and this is the Turf Show Times podcast where every week we do an instant reaction show after the Rams game. We also come out with multiple episodes throughout the week, including a preview of the opponent, and that's what we're doing today. And with me to preview the Rams' upcoming opponent at SoFi Stadium this Sunday at 1:25 p.m. That's for the LA Rams fans. 4:25 p.m. I suppose if you're a Tampa Bay fan. Checking out JC Allen of the Pewter Report coming to talk about the Bucks with me. JC, thanks for joining me on Turf Show Times Radio, because I'm so excited to preview the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. You must feel similarly. Come on, you feel the same way about the Rams, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think this is going to be a great game. You're looking at, you know, through 2 weeks of football, what appear to be two of the top teams in the NFC conference. Yeah. So early test for both teams. I think both teams have weaknesses that each other can exploit. I'm really looking forward to this matchup. It should be a really good one. And this has all the makings of a high-scoring, mm-hmm. high-flying passing attack game. So it should be really good. And it's America's game, so it'll be nationally broadcast too.
Yeah, it's the type of game that could be on prime time, but also this is also the America's game is
mini prime time.
Yeah, exactly. You know, it's a marquee game. Everyone's going to watch it. The NFL, if you didn't know, is still the most popular TV show. And that's going to be the game that people are watching. This is what I love about football. I don't care what team you root for. If you're a football fan, you sign up. We're going to talk about, you know, 10, 11, 12 of the best 100 players in the NFL, if not more. And that's all happening in this game right here. JC, I want to start off talking about what makes the Bucs so feared and respected and good, which is the 10-game winning streak, which includes the Super Bowl, of course. The Bucs were 7-5 in Tom Brady's first 12 games. They're 10-0 since then. They've gone up against really good teams and destroyed the Chiefs, and they've had no real issues with a lot of teams. Certainly they do have some issues maybe that we will get into later on right now, but right now they are the best team in the NFL. What was the biggest difference between those first 12 games and what's happened since?
I think players play. They're ultimately the guys on the field making plays and going out there. But I think coaching had a lot to do with it as well. You know, Tom Brady, 7-5, you mentioned, was still getting the playbook. He really didn't have a full grasp on that playbook until the week 13 bye week. And you saw what happened afterwards. You know, the play action, the pre-snap motion changed a little bit. They're going to a different evolution of their offense, and Tom kind of got the playbook down a little bit more. And on the defensive side, the same thing. They played a completely different game in the playoffs than they did in the regular season. A lot of too high looks, and, you know, obviously going against those quarterbacks and those receiving cores that they had, they drew up the best game plan, Todd Bowles, to put them in the best scenario to win. But I think it starts with, you know, obviously all the players buying in, knowing the system and believing in one another. But I think coaching really kind of took it to the next level as well, and saying, okay, this is what we can do. This is what we can do well. Then teaching it and relaying it down to the players and having them execute properly on the field. That's been a huge step for this team. Now, going into a full off season after winning the Super Bowl, unlike last year where it was, you know, a truncated off season, no preseason games. I think that's really helped this team, especially offensively, come together. Tom knows the playbook inside and out. He's able to add more of his stuff. He's able to do make those calls and adjustments and be on the same page with all of his wide receivers and all everyone on offense, quite frankly. And the defense, yeah, they've came out a little bit slow, but I think that's something that we've seen over the past couple of years. The defense is coming out slow, not necessarily for every team, but certainly for this Bucs team, it looks like they're not playing up to the standards that we saw in the Super Bowl or the playoffs.
And JC, how long have you been a Tom Brady fan?
Tom Brady fan. Bring me back to Mo Williams. bring me back to that hit. I am from New England originally. So I grew up rooting for Tom Brady and the Patriots. I've recently moved down to Tampa about 2 years ago and kind of fell into this career, and it's kind of taken off, and I've covered the Bucs now for, this will be my second full season. Just happened to fall in line when Tom Brady and Gronk came down here. So it couldn't have been worked out better for me, having known these guys, watched these guys, studied these guys, you know, as just someone who loves the game of football.
Yeah.
But what's not to love about the guy? I know some people, especially Rams fans, will bring up Spygate and all these other things that, you know, why the not dislike Tom Brady. But, you know, he's a class act on the field, off the field. And I really just, you know, he's obviously a heck of a competitor.
Yeah.
Two-time FedEx Player of the Week so far.
Wow.
Back to back awards.
It is pretty, there's so many things that we could get into about Tom Brady. They'd all be positives. But, I'm not one of those Tom Brady haters. Why would you hate? I mean, it's like, if you could give anything to go back and watch Babe Ruth play baseball, wouldn't you want to go actually watch Babe Ruth play baseball? That's what Tom Brady is. You know, he is probably the greatest football player of all time. So to not enjoy that in the time that it's happening, and especially at a time when he's doing something that nobody's ever done before, which just, you know, just
it's a shame.
It's crazy to, you know, think like all the things that Tom Brady, he has changed about the game of football, that he's changed about what people believe about the game of football, you know, and I want to know that experience of being a Patriots fan with Tom Brady and then being a Bucs fan with Tom Brady. Like, how would you describe that feeling of winning the seventh Super Bowl? Was it as exciting as the first six?
Well, so, you know, obviously as a Patriots fan, I wanted him to stay in New England, but being in Tampa, and it's funny, I put out a Facebook post detailing all the reasons why I could come to Tampa, and I got blasted by friends and family. He's never going there. He's going to LA Chargers. He's going here. He's staying. He's retiring. And he came down here and everyone had to eat crow. So, him coming down here was best case scenario. If he's not going to be the Patriots, at least he's with a team that I can watch. And I kind of, you know, 2-3 months later fell into covering the team. So I will say, all the Super Bowls are great. I think the 28-3, you can never replicate what he was able to do. But this Tampa Super Bowl, for me, it was a little bit different because I was connected to it. You know, I was interviewing these guys pre-Super Bowl. I was talking to them post-Super Bowl. I was, you know, covering the team. So I was I was invested as more than just a fan. I mean, I'm a fan of Tom Brady. I try to stay really, distant away from being a fan of being of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. I want to make sure that when I'm writing, when I'm talking, it's not coming off as, you know, biased or anything like that. But, you know, as a fan of Tom Brady, as a, you know, just being so close to everything, it was definitely a great feeling having them win the Super Bowl here, make history. And it was different because at that point the Patriots were ruled out. So, you know, if you're going to root for anybody, root for Tom Brady, and covering him and being able to talk to, you know, Gronk right after he wins the Super Bowl, those experiences I'll never, ever, ever forget. So it definitely had a different weight to it than any of the Patriots ones, but equally just as satisfying.
There's no question that the 16-0. I'm already on a 17 schedule with the history somehow, but I was going to say the 17-0 Patriots. But there's no history that the 16-0 Patriots were an extremely talented team, and there's no question that Tom Brady went to, you know, won 6 Super Bowls, and he just won one with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. You know, as someone who has studied Tom Brady's career, talking about the 2021 Bucs. Could this be the most talented team that's ever been around Tom Brady?
Yeah. I mean, I think if you look at last year and this year, I mean, they're two of the most talented teams for sure. Even that 2017 that I can't believe you brought up. I just told you I was a Patriots fan. I didn't bring up the greatest show on turf, but no, I mean, I really do. I mean, you look at all over the field, there's playmakers, and, you know, certainly this year, probably more to an extent that he knows the full offense, that he's got Antonio Brown for a full year instead of 8 games. It looks to be, now the running game hasn't gotten going, you know, nearly anywhere where they wanted it to. They have Giovanni Bernard here, who's, you know, kind of like that James White security blanket that they haven't used as much. But I think if you look all over the field, even Gronk, you know, 2 weeks, 2 tutties. I think he's got his feet under him. He's got the playbook under him.
What makes Gronk so good? Is it just that he's a giant guy who catches passes really well? What makes him so good in the red zone?
It's everything. This guy, I mean, he joked, I don't know if you watched the Peyton and Eli that he doesn't watch film, but this guy is one of the smartest players in the NFL. He really is. And, you know, Tom, Bill Belichick, you know, anyone will tell you this guy puts in the work. BA will tell you he puts in the work, and, you know, he studies on his opponents, and his size, his speed, his, you know, hands all definitely play into a part of that. But his relationship with Tom as well, just knowing that, hey, I know I've got this guy. If it's this coverage, he's going to do this, and not having to kind of wonder, you know, what's happening, knowing that they're already seeing things the same way, make them such a dynamic duo in the red zone. And, you know, Gronk, again, his ability to scout opponents and get with Tom and talk about, okay, what are we seeing on this coverage? Yeah. What do you want me to do? Helps make him, you know, in my opinion, the greatest tight end of all time.
This team did face off, you know, against the Rams last season. Yes. The Rams won that game. It was, it was kind of surprising, obviously, to see how the two teams went in different directions after that. Although that kind of seems to be the case a lot every year. You know, sometimes the best teams in November are just out of it by December and or at least early January. And the Bucks, they lost that game. They lost that game to the Chiefs the week later, and then 8 straight after the bye week. But that game against the Rams, these are very similar teams in a lot of ways. The one big change, of course, being Matthew Stafford. And that should be quite a notable change. That should be a pretty big change to throw into the mix on top of everything else. What are your thoughts based on what happened last year? Because it will be such a similar game, but in a new location.
Yeah, I think, I mean, Matt Stafford's huge. Bringing him in brings a completely different element to the offense. You know, there were times where they'd want to get the ball down the field, but Goff just didn't have the arm strength. And that's not the case with Matty Stafford. He can chuck the ball, and we've seen that throughout 2 games to Van Jefferson and obviously to Cooper Kupp, who, speaking of last year's game, went off completely. 11 catches, 145 yards, no touchdowns, but made 3 critical third down conversions to keep drives alive. Robert Woods again right there, 12 catches, 100 and something yards with a touchdown. So adding a guy, even Van Jefferson too. Yeah, I mean, he had a touchdown in that game as well. So adding a guy like Matt Stafford definitely brings this offense up to a different level. You know, similarities definitely on both sides of the ball. I think you're looking at a guy like Jalen Ramsey and a guy like Carlton Davis. Obviously, Jalen Ramsey is probably the best cornerback and a top 5 defensive player in the game, but he's probably going to be shadowing your best wide receiver, which is Mike Evans. So he'll take the matchup of Mike Evans. Well, Carlton Davis takes the matchup of Robert Woods, which leaves you with both of these teams really having questions at cornerback, following up 2 of the most prolific wide receivers from the slot in the game right now, which is Cooper Kupp and Chris Godwin. Yeah. It's a different level. Antonio Brown out right now on the COVID list, asymptomatic, thankfully. So 2 negative tests within 48 hours, he can come back. I think if you're looking at Antonio Brown and Van Jefferson, you give the slight nod, just a slight nod to Antonio Brown, but still 2 very dangerous players in their own right. So, you know, you look at it, across the board, and they're going to present some of the same challenges. The one thing I think works a little bit more in the Buccaneers' favor is offensive line. I think their offensive line is much better than the Rams. We saw them last year hold Aaron Donald statless. That doesn't mean Aaron Donald's presence wasn't felt, because it certainly was, tying up multiple blockers. but they were able to say, okay, beat us with everybody else. Last year, the Rams had trouble doing that. This year, the Rams seem to be doing a little bit better job of really, you know, having contributors come from everywhere else, whether it's Floyd or Ritter or any of those other guys who are coming on. So, if you look at flip that around on the other side, I just don't know if they're going to have an answer for the Buccaneers pass rush, which hasn't got to the quarterback as much as they'd like, but has gotten a ton of pressure on the quarterback, been in their face, and definitely a few missed sack opportunities. Yeah. I think this line for the Rams are really going to have their hands full, and they're going to have to really hold on to their blocks, right, and maybe even use some running back and tight end protection to keep Matt Stafford off his back. So I think right. That's where you're looking at as a key matchup where, you know, the Bucs are going to have to try to exploit and take advantage of, because I don't think they're going to allow either it's Henderson or Sony Michel to run on them.
Yeah. I would say definitely that the Bucs will present one of the most difficult front sevens to deal with in the NFL, you know, being the Super Bowl champions with a healthy Vita Vea added into that, as well as Joe Tryon more and more as the year goes on, in addition of course to Shaq Barrett and Jason Pierre-Paul and Lavonte David and Devin White and Namakong Su. You know, it's pretty stacked up there, so no doubt I think that the Rams offensive line, more so than the Rams offensive line either, it's just that having a quarterback like Stafford back there means that the Rams can allow a little bit more pressure now, because he's not going to panic. He's not going to freak out. He's going to he's going to climb the pocket and look for the throw. So that will be another really good test there, because Brian Allen against Vita Vea, you know, Brian Allen, the center of the Rams, has had a nice start to the season. He's gone up against some really nice defensive tackles as well. Vea and Sue are of another level, maybe the best DT combination in the NFL. So, but you know, you talked about the Rams pass rush as well. And, you know, really, I think the one thing going is Aaron Donald. And I think him and maybe Sebastian Joseph Day has been an underrated player this season. Yes. But would like to see the Rams, some of those other players, including Floyd, be a little bit more consistent there as in terms of being another real pass rusher. And certainly I think you're right about, and you would know, Tampa Bay's offensive line being one of the better ones. I'm assuming Tristan Wirfs is still on the path to being like an all pro.
Yeah. He had a bad rep last week. But I mean, he's still a second year player, and bad reps are going to happen to everybody. But, very encouraging by this kid. You know, and I definitely agree with what you said about Matt Stafford. And I think that's one of the biggest things, too, about this offense going forward. Sean McVay's got himself a quarterback. He doesn't need to quarterback. He's not on the sideline. You know, he's got a guy who's a veteran of the system, veteran of the game, who picked up the system very quickly and can go to the line, make reads, make all the adjustments, make the hot routes. And not only that, not make mistakes. I mean, I know Monday Night Football, whether you were watching it or not, Jared Goff goes in there and throws that interception, which essentially takes the Lions out of any sort of comeback window. And, you know, I put it up on that's the Jared Goff I know. And that's the Jared Goff Rams fans have come to know. And having a guy like Matt Stafford, who's got a 5-1 ratio right now, is definitely a breath of fresh air. I do think, you know, you mentioned Allen and Vita Vea. Vita Vea is 2-for-2 taking centers on trips to their quarterback. So I wouldn't be surprised to see a little vacation back there to Matty Stafford at some point. But it's going to be a good matchup. I think a really great test. I'm surprised again, as same as with the Patriots game the following week for the Bucs, that these matchups are so early, especially with the Buccaneers, where their schedule is just it's kind of weak. You know, it's rated the fourth easiest strength of schedule. I know any given Sunday that can change based off last year's records, but you know, you're putting the Cowboys, you're putting the Rams, you're putting the Patriots all in this real quick 4-week window. And I'm surprised that they didn't stretch it out or make this a primetime game, because I think this game is going to have a lot of eyeballs on it, because these are the two, in my opinion, are the two creams of the crop in the NFC.
I do think in a way, because as you did say of it being America's game of the week, I mean, in a way, it feels like this is another opportunity, because like having Tom Brady and the Bucs go to SoFi Stadium in the second SoFi, because the first SoFi Stadium game was on primetime for Sunday Night Football. The second SoFi Stadium game, I think last week with the Chargers, they were on primetime, I think. Am I wrong about that?
The second game? Yeah, no, they were
the Chargers on primetime last week.
The Chargers?
Oh, no, the Chargers were at home at SoFi.
Chargers Stadium. Played the Cowboys. I don't know if they were primetime or not. I don't think so.
But then this game, you know, being at SoFi Stadium, yeah, a lot of eyeballs on it. I wouldn't be surprised if it does, you know, record numbers. Like if on Monday the news comes out that the ratings were the highest Sunday afternoon game since 2013 or something, that wouldn't surprise me.
Well, you know, the NFL wants to show off their brand new building next to SoFi too. So.
Oh, yeah, right. So I wanted to ask you about the secondary in Tampa Bay. So let me see if I can do this. It's going to be a challenge, but I'm going to try and rank your six, the way that you feel about your six young defensive backs in the secondary for Tampa Bay. And you tell me how right or wrong I am. So there's six, I'm guessing. Number one, Carlton Davis, 25-year-old cornerback. Number two, Antoine Winfield Jr., 23-year-old safety. Number three, Mike Edwards, 25-year-old safety. Number four, Jordan Whitehead, 24-year-old safety. Number five, Jamel Dean, 25-year-old cornerback. And number six, Sean Murphy Bunting, 24-year-old cornerback. Am I close?
Yes and no. So pretty much that order. But I'm you're sleeping on Sean Murphy Bunting, and I know if he's injured right now and had a little bit of a game, you know, earlier in against Cooper Kupp there. Amari Cooper, sorry, one of the Coopers. but I've got him number three. I've got Carlton Davis, who I think is on the cusp of being a top 10 cornerback, if not already there. Antoine Winfield Jr., I think if he continues to play at a high level that he finished off last year and, you know, did last year as well, I think he becomes a top 10 safety, certainly top 15 safety if he's not already in this league. And then I got Sean Murphy Bunting. I know he's injured right now, but I've seen a lot of growth from him, especially in the playoffs. He was playing banged up all year last year, got injured in the first game, drew a tough assignment, you know, covering guys like CeeDee Lamb and Cooper and Amari Cooper. So, you know, I give him a little bit of slack on that. But then I've got Mike Edwards for some of the reasons you saw. Guy's a ball hawk, and now he's showing that he can play some nickel as well. So they definitely need to find more ways to get him on the field and get him on the field as soon as possible in different scenarios other than just, you know, sub packages. Then I got Jamel Dean because, you know, you can't teach speed, and he's still learning. He's still progressing. He's still, you know, getting down concepts and how to read quarterbacks, and so I think he's got a high, I think his ceiling is higher than what he is. And I got Jordan Whitehead bringing up the rear because I just think Jordan Whitehead is what he is. You know, he's a hard hitting safety in a dying game. You know, he's very limited. He had two interceptions last year, but he's not really much of a playmaker. Obviously the forced fumble in Green Bay, he'll give you some of those plays, but you know, his range as well. I just think the other guys ahead of him, I think you can move Antoine Winfield to strong safety and still have some of the aspects and move Mike Edwards to free safety, which if they don't re-sign Jordan Whitehead, you could look to see happen this offseason. But that's the way I've got him ranked. So, I mean, pretty close, a little bit off, but the top two are right.
Are there any players on the Bucs who won't play this weekend? Young players that are just stuck on the depth chart that that Tampa Bay is very excited about?
Well, I'll tell you one, you know, two guys who might not play is going to be Antonio Brown, who is on the team's COVID list. I talked about him a little bit earlier, which would open up the doorway, especially because Jaden Mickens as well, he's day-to-day with a hip injury. That opened the door for Jalen Darden, the team's fourth-round pick they traded up for. Mm-hmm. A very explosive kid. Some, you know, he's had some rookie mistakes, rookie hand problems, but he's the team's he'll probably be the team's returner if Jaden Mickens can't go, and they might dial up some packages for him. Electric off the line of scrimmage, electric with the ball in his hand. This guy was performing pretty well in training camp, so well, in fact, that he could only really go up against the number one cornerback unit. We're talking SMB, Sean Murphy Bunting, Jamel Dean, and Carlton Davis, because the rest of the guys, he just blow them off the line of scrimmage. And even he still made some plays on those guys too. So as a rookie fourth round pick, I think if Antonio Brown can't go and if Jaden Mickens can't go, you might see the debut of Jalen Darden, another guy who will play no matter what, but may see more playing time, extensive playing time, could be Joe Tryon Soyinka. You have JPP was held out of practice today with a shoulder injury. If he can't suit up, Joe Tryon's going to take that. Soyinka's going to take that. We call him JTS because Joe Tryon Soyinka gets really exhausted.
So is that the etiquette? You can't say Joe Tryon. Is that not enough?
That's his name. You know, he wants
okay, to. Okay, because I only have react because that wasn't why. I wonder why they didn't report it that way or what.
Well, he changed his jersey number towards the end of training camp. So, I mean, Joe Tryon Soyinka, that's the jersey you wore all through college as well. So, you know, I just call him JTS when I can after I've already established his name, but he might get more playing time and he arguably could be our John Ledyard wrote about this in his Bucks briefing that came out this morning. He could potentially be the Bucks best one-on-one edge rusher right now already. He's amazingly good. Lewis Riddick talked about him recently in an interview I had with him. You know, he could be the steal of the draft, he said. This guy, the combination of strength, size, agility, smarts, he's the real deal. He's going to be terrorizing quarterbacks for a long time. So, you know, Kevin Minter is another guy who might be out. So maybe Mr. Irrelevant Grant Stewart or KJ Britt see a little bit more time playing. But for the most part, I think what you're going to see is, you know, the normal crew go out there. Keyshawn Vaughn, I think, will probably remain inactive, who's his second year running back. But yeah, I mean, I you know, hopefully you don't see any of the offensive linemen.
Do you think the Bucks will run the ball at all?
I think they'll try. I mean, you got to establish the run. And you know, you don't necessarily need it for the play action, because that's been disproven. And, you know, the Buccaneers still did great in play action and could barely move the ball last week. Tom Brady was 10 for 14, 100 and some odd yards and 2 touchdowns. So, you know, you don't need to set up the run to set up play action, but, you know, you need to get it going at some point, especially in the latter half of games when you have wins. And it's something that this Bucs team has not been able to do. Rojo, for some reason, has this mental blockage. He's still one of these guys that is not ever going to be, I think, a true three-down running back. He showed that on a third-down play where he completely whiffed on a blitz pickup and got Tom Brady hammered. Another play as a runner as a receiver where he caught the ball and went out of bounds about half yard before the sticks when he could have lowered his shoulder and kind of, you know, got the first down, but it looks like he kind of cowered it out. And Leonard Fournette is more of a volume guy. You got to give him a lot of carries to get going. And the way this offense is predicated is it's a pass first offense. So, you know, you're not going to continuously pump the ball to the running backs when you have such explosive wide receivers on the team. So it's going to be difficult. And for some reason, I don't know why, but Bruce Arians will not use Giovanni Bernard, you know, on third downs, especially, and that's kind of his role. And I think he could be a huge asset to this team and it'd be an extension of that run game, much as Tom Brady used, you know, you name the running backs, you know, Kevin Falk, Deion Lewis, you know, Woodhead, James White, Shane Vereen, the list goes on and on and on of how many running backs he used as an extension of the run game, but they're not getting Gio involved in that. But definitely think they're going to try to. They have to.
Yeah. Speaking of the Patriots, you know, Bill Belichick was a guy who always won a lot of games, and then his assistant coaches would get head coaching jobs, and those wouldn't always or ever work out, you know, up until a certain point. And Bill Belichick always had his guys, and so a lot of his guys would either just not leave or they would return. And that's kind of been the case with Bruce Arians as well. It seems like he really has his guys, like a Todd Bowles or Byron Leftwich, the two coordinators, Harold Goodwin, the assistant head coach. A lot of it seems like his guys. Do you expect Tampa Bay to retain a lot of assistant coaches if they continue to win and Tom Brady doesn't go anywhere? Do you feel like this is a group that's going to stick together?
Yeah, I mean, I think Todd Bowles definitely gets some interest this year. I think Byron Leftwich gets some interest this year. It also depends on what's going to happen. I mean, the cap is going to go up this year, but you're not going to be able to afford to keep everybody around. Guys like Steve McClendon, Ndamukong Suh, they might decide to retire. You know, depending on the outcome of the game, you might have other guys decide to go elsewhere. I think it's going to depend on kind of what's going on now. You know, if they go to the Super Bowl, it's a little bit different this year because now, you know, you can hire guys before the Super Bowl. You can talk to them and hire them. Before, you couldn't do that. They changed the rule. So I definitely think they'll get looks. Whether they feel like they're ready to go off on their own is one thing. Todd Bowles, I think it's going to have to be a very, you know, a good situation for him. I don't think he wants to go back into a Jet situation. I think it's going to be a team that just, hey, we need a shake up at coach, but we have the talent on the offense and defense side of the ball. Let's get you in here and you know, let's go. And for Byron, it might be like, hey, we want a young coordinator, you know, let's get a young guy in here who is still, you know, still a little bit green, only 3-4 years, really 2 years play calling. But
I feel like it would be perfect for him to go replace Urban Meyer in Jacksonville.
I'm hearing a lot of Urban Meyer is one and done. I don't necessarily know if that's the case, but again, that's a team that needs some help too. I mean, you look on the defensive side of the ball, I don't know what their cap space is going to be like that, but I think both of these guys aren't going to want to leave unless it's the right situation. Todd Bowles has been there, done that, been a head coach, and he knows how difficult it can be. And I think, you know, parting that wisdom onto a Byron Leftwich as well from BA and also from Todd Bowles to say, hey, make sure the situation's right. If, you know, you come back and we continue to win, it's not like your name's going to be taken off the coaching list. People are still going to be interested in you. And sometimes it's almost like, you know, the girl at the dance, you know, it turns you down. It makes you want her more, you know? So you never know, you know, if he turns someone down or decides to whatever, it might be a situation, but then you might have something open up like in Chicago and the chance to work with Justin Fields might be too alluring to him.
And
so it's going to be interesting to see what happens in the offseason or in the playoffs, actually, once the coaching candidates start being named around. But I certainly expect both of those guys to get interviews.
Yeah. And do you think, now I have two questions, but then we're going to wrap this up. It's been a great to know. Now I feel like, I even know a lot more about the Bucks and much more, even more excited for this game. The Bucks have a young quarterback to work with. Any excitement there on Kyle Trask?
Kyle Trask is a rookie and he's a second round rookie. You know, he's not a guy, you know, he looked, the grasp of the offense was coming, but again, this is a guy who never really took any snaps under center. So he's having to learn all that. He's learning from the best though. I'll say that, you know, there's definitely signs of encouragement, but when you're learning from, and when I say the best, I'm not even just talking about Tom Brady or Bruce Arians. You know, Bruce Arians, a quarterback whisperer, Tom Brady, the best of all time to ever do it. But he's got Tom Moore, who will forget more about football than we'll ever know. He's got Byron Leftwich. He's got Clyde Christensen. You know, Blaine Gabbert, for what he's been in the league, still has a wealth of knowledge, especially in this system, in this offense. So he's under great hands, great tutelage. Whether he pans out to be the team's future or not, it is here or there. I'm in the school of thought, you know, much like especially watching the Patriots growing up, always draft to have a developmental quarterback on hand. You never know what it's going to be, whether it could be a Ryan Mallett, it could be a Jacoby Brissett that gets you a Dorsett that helps you win the Super Bowl, whether it could be a Jimmy Garoppolo, whether it could be, you know, Jared Stidham, whatever it could be, a Brian Hoyer, even though he was undrafted. You should always be in the process of Matt Castle, another one. Always be in the process of developing quarterbacks, young quarterbacks on your roster. And that's what they're doing. I mean, if you looked at this roster, yes, maybe you could take, you know, make a case that they could have taken a second round cornerback, you know, at the end of the second round, now with cornerback issues and having a guy like Dee Delaney be your fifth guy. Maybe they could have taken, you know, a fourth safety, or maybe they could have taken a, you know, a ninth defensive lineman. But at that spot, at that position, you know, you got a guy that you believe in that, you know, seems to fit your system, is the type of guy that BA likes. Why not take the risk on him? You know, you're in a point in time with a roster so stacked that you can take that luxury, that you can afford that luxury. I mean, this is a team that was going to go wide receiver running back in round one if Kadarius Toney or Travis Etienne was still on the board. So, I mean, you know, you grab the guy like Joe Tryon Choyinka, who looks like he's going to be in a, you know, a top defensive edge rusher in the league.
Yeah.
You know, why not roll the dice, roll that dice in the second round on a quarterback who could be, you know, potentially, you know, your successor to Tom Brady. And if you look after Davis Mills and blanking on the other guy's name, Kellen Mond were taken right after him. So, I mean, you know, that looks like that it was a sweet spot for quarterbacks. Now, Kirk Cousins in one place, Deshaun Watson up in the air. Davis Mills is going to get his first couple starts here. But, you know, looked like the sweet spot for quarterbacks if you're going to take one.
Yeah, it seems like if you can make a second round pick, if you can make a developmental pick that you guarantee is the number three quarterback for at least a year, that's always, I think, more preferable to some of the situations where quarterbacks have already been pressed into situations maybe too soon. But, the one last question I have, you know, I never tend to do like, you know, predictions or scores and stuff like that, especially in a game like this. You know, it's just too heavyweights right now. But the NFL did something else with your schedule. And, it's that part about playing the New England Patriots in week 4 and in New England, and nobody will probably appreciate it more than you, JC. Do you even care about the Rams game? Do you think that people are even, do you think that there's any chance? I don't think that Tom Brady would ever overlook a game. So I'm not worried about Tom Brady. I'm also not worried about the Bucks. I'm not really thinking about whether or not the players can handle it. But do you think there is that the Patriots are next?
Definitely. It's definitely looming. They're definitely getting questions asked about it. But I don't think fans are overlooking this team. And this is as you said, two heavyweights. This is a matchup right now that obviously, you know, Mike Evans called it a revenge game. He's looking forward to going out there and beating this Rams team who came in and beat them at home. So I don't think anyone's really overlooking it. I know in the back of their mind, you know, Patriots are next, and it's going to be, you know, a game that Tom Brady has returned to New England. And if, you know, he does not play for another 3 years after this, they're not going to see each other because it's only once every 4 years, unless they meet in the Super Bowl, which I doubt happens. But, you know, this is a game that has big implications to it, not necessarily divisional or anything like that, but it's, you know, momentum. If the Bucs can win that game and, you know, get the Patriots behind them, because everyone's circled it, everyone's talked about it since, you know, before the schedule even came out last year. You know, Brady's going to have to go back there. But do I think in any instance that anyone's overlooking this game? No, because of the magnitude of the situation, right? We're talking about two teams in my mind that are going to be vying for the NFC championship and representing their team, their conference in the Super Bowl. And, you know, not only right now in regular season standings, but down the road as well for seeding issues. If they end up with the same record head to head, and just saying, hey, you know, this team is, you know, kind of like what we were last year. You know, a lot of people were picking them for the Super Bowl, or, you know, it all depends on how quickly the quarterback meshes with the team. And, you know, they want to beat this team and say, hey, you know, you guys beat us last year. We're going to come in here. We're going to beat you here. Plus Brady's got to get that victory in LA too. He hasn't, you know, he's never played in LA. If he's going to win in every stadium, it starts next week, this week in LA, before he can go out to New England and win in that stadium as an opposing quarterback. But, you know, I'll give you a score prediction. I think this, you know, for some weird reason in me, I feel like this game could be low scoring even though both of these offenses are so explosive.
Yeah.
I don't know. I have a weird feeling it could be low scoring, but I'm going to go against my feeling, against my gut. I'm going to say it's going to be 34-31 Buccaneers. Going to come down to a field goal. Whether that's, you know, just a field goal apart, whether that's suck up making a last minute field goal, whether that's, you know, Matt Gay missing the last minute field goal to tie it up. I just feel like a field goal comes into play somewhere around here, and these teams put up over 60 points combined. But I would not be shocked if it was a low scoring game. I really wouldn't be.
I was about to say, you think 34-31 is a low score? No, that was my immediate. And I was like, oh yeah, of course. You mean it's not going to, your prediction isn't a low score, although you think
it could happen.
Prepare for it. Yeah. You know, I mean, at the end of the day, both of these teams have all pro players on the defense
and very well coached too.
Yeah, very, very much so. And both of them, you know, last season you could have argued that the Rams had the number one pass defense and the Bucs absolutely had the number one run defense. So on that, again, a lot of those things are the same, although the Rams did lose defensive coordinator Brandon Staley and then got Raheem and Morris, Johnson, who the Bucs know very well.
And they lost JJ too. So,
that is a big loss as well. And there's been a numerous changes, but having Aaron Donald is the one thing. You know, I really think you could say that Tom Brady and Aaron Donald are the top two players in the NFL right now, and they will be going against each other in a few days.
Yeah, offensive and defensive MVP so far. I think Kyler Murray's making a great case, but you can't overlook what Tom Brady's done at the age of 44, people.
Yeah.
Insane. And as you said, you know, it's a shame for people who hate Tom Brady, who can't, you know, just live in the moment and say, hey, we're witnessing something that we will probably never, ever see again. And just appreciate it for football and for what it's worth. But
for football, at
44, I tell you, when I came down here for training camp, after watching him in New England and the first time I saw him throw a ball, I was like, where did that come from? The zip, the velocity. He's reinvigorated down here, and it's obviously showed. 50 touchdowns, including the playoffs last year. And I think Gronk is on his way to like 76 touchdowns if he keeps it. I mean, it's crazy. What he's been able to do at this age, and you know, he keeps getting handsomer too. I think that's why people are so mad. When you look at him when he was younger to compare to now, it's like, you know, did he get plastic surgery?
No. Probably. Well, I won't say probably. That's not my place.
But celebrities get better looking as they age. I don't know what happens, but
yeah. Well, you know, and it's funny to me that, you know, like I know a guy who like writes for Will Smith's Instagram, and that's not just one guy. He like works on a team of people whose job is just there. And like Tom Brady's at that Will Smith level of celebrity and Instagram. And yet he also seems to be quick-witted in an interview. So like, he's also not just funny online, you know, he seems to have a quick wit about himself.
Yeah, he's great. His social media posts are just something. They're hilarious.
Yeah, he's on top of it there.
I will say, I cannot wait until I'm not sure it's going to happen, but how can you not get him on with Eli and Peyton Manning on a Monday Night Football broadcast? Which, by the way, rest in peace to ESPN's regular Monday Night Football broadcast, because, man, that is just too entertaining to watch. Now, I desperately want Tom Brady to get there because I want to hear him rib on Peyton, and I want Eli to be like, hey, yeah, how's that undefeated?
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, that is probably the next big get, right? Is Tom Brady as a broadcaster. But yeah, if only they could get him to do it on like a bye week, but that's probably not going to happen. Right. JC Allen from the Pewter Report, PEWTER, Pewter Report, here to talk about the Bucks. JC, where can people find you? Anything you'd like to plug or say before we go?
Yeah, definitely. Follow me on Twitter at JC Allen, A-L-L-E-N, NFL, at JC Allen, NFL on Twitter. Follow us on Pewter Report on Twitter as well, pewterreport.com. If you guys want more information on this current matchup, what our thoughts are, what the strengths and weaknesses, we just put out a roundtable on what players we need to watch for on the Rams who, you know, I don't want to say scare us the most, but make us feel uneasy. Spoiler alert, I picked Cooper Kupp. I think he's going to have a heck of a game. Very nervous about him. But definitely check us out, our information. As I always say on here, I think it's great to learn more about opposing teams. Any way to expand your NFL knowledge as a fan, as someone who loves the game, it's always a plus. So I've had a great time learning more about the Rams this week, just based off my own study and talking to someone like you as well. So I guys want to thank you to have me on here. Guys, check me out on Twitter. Check us out on Twitter, and go Bucks.
Well, go Rams. Let's not forget that. That's it for Turf Showtimes Radio, the podcast. Go ahead and subscribe there and make sure you're checking out all of our upcoming episodes, including right after this Sunday's game against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. I'll go ahead and pick the Rams to win just to make sure we're balanced there, and as well as I believe it. So there you go for this episode of Turf Show Times, the podcast. Come back soon for the next episode.